Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. The Sarah Mildred Long Bridge links Maine and New Hampshire at Portsmouth, New Hampshire. The original 1940 bridge was a double-deck, vertical lift structure carrying both motor vehicles and rail service. It was recently replaced with a modern lift bridge of unique design. To learn about the new bridge, we're talking with Jeff Folson, who's Assistant Program Manager for the Bridge Program for the Maine Department of Transportation. Jeff, I'm really happy to talk with you this morning.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here with you.
So the name of the bridge, that seems unusual. What's the source?
The name of the bridge? The Sarah Long Bridge, it was named after Sarah Mildred Long, who was a longtime employee of the Interstate Bridge Authority. She actually started as a secretary of the Bridge Authority and ended up retiring as the secretary of the Bridge Authority. So the existing bridge, which was built in 1940, that was renamed in her honor in 1987. So the replacement bridge also bears her name as well.
That's really amazing. There are very few components of civil infrastructure who are named after somebody that was involved in the organization that actually delivered that piece of infrastructure. So that's something for us to remember. Can you tell us about the design? How is it unique?
Well, there's a lot there that's unique. Probably the most innovative thing with this project, which really opened the door for a lot of the technical innovations, is the delivery method. And we used a CMGC, a construction manager, general contractor approach. What that does, in case you're not familiar with it, basically in a nutshell, is it invites a builder to the table during the design process, and it gives you the opportunity to talk through a lot of potential technical innovations and really vet the constructability, feasibility, and cost of those. You know, some of the key innovations there, and I'll probably just focus on the movable portion here, but with the movable design, probably the biggest innovation there and the thing that's most unique about this bridge, it's a hybrid lift span is what we call it. What that means is the lift span, while the approach bridge is a double deck structure with a roadway deck on the top level and a railroad deck at the lower level, the lift span is a single deck. It spends most of its time at the roadway level serving vehicular traffic, but it also is able to raise up to allow tall ships to pass underneath, and then it can also lower from the roadway deck down to the railroad level to accommodate a train. So it's a little bit unique in that it moves up and down, as most vertical lift bridges typically only go one way.
The rail tracks themselves, are they embedded in the roadway?
They are for the lift span. In the lift span, the railroad tracks are embedded into a center median that's about 5 feet wide. You know, we included that extra width in the middle because we were concerned about motorcyclists running over the railroad tracks. They're flush with the roadway surface, and they sit just inside the yellow line in each lane. When the lift span lowers down, those made up, you know, with a conventional rail tie and ballast construction that's on the railroad approach bands.
But the rails are fixed. It's not on an aggregate ballast, is it, for the lift span?
For the lift span, they are fixed. They're directly fixed to the concrete deck,
yeah.
And they sit down so that they're flush. So there's nothing. There's actually a rubber boot that sort of sticks. It's similar to a grade crossing you might find at an intersection. The rails are flush with the roadway surface, so you can drive over them. We've tried to keep the rail itself out of the travel lane, just to avoid any conflict with the motorcyclists getting their tire caught in that little groove there.
So normal operations, the roadway part is in position and it serves flow through traffic. But for rail operations, the bridge drops down to the level of the rails?
Yes, that's correct. You know, what we did initially in the design is we took a hard look at how the bridge moves currently and what the traffic was like. And what we found was that, you know, if we could increase the resting vertical clearance underneath the bridge to in the 55 to 60 foot range, we could limit the number of openings for ships to about a third of what they were prior. The previous bridge had a resting underclearance for navigation of about 10 feet. So almost every vessel that passed underneath required a lift of some height. Coupled that with the fact that the railway bridge is only used a handful of times a year. It serves the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, and it carries some very important cargo in and out of the shipyard. But it's not a high-traffic rail line by any means. So essentially, we're trading somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,000 moves that we previously had for, you know, maybe 4 to 6 moves to accommodate the railroad bridge. So what that means is it's a lot fewer disruptions for the motorists traveling on the vehicular deck, and it's a lot more free-flowing underneath for navigation, you know, for your typical pleasure boats, sailboats, fishing boats, things like that can pass pretty much unobstructed, you know, through the span.
So the bridge has to be raised only for the largest ships?
The largest ships, yeah. And typically, upstream of the Sarah Long Bridge, there's a few different industrial customers. You know, there's Winter Salt that gets delivered upstream. There's gypsum. There's other manufacturing facilities, wire and other, you know, fuel cargo, those types of things.
Bulk cargo, it looked like, from the map that I checked out. It looked like there was a bulk terminal just north of the interstate highway bridge.
Yeah, there's a bulk terminal right there that they take gypsum and salt, and then further upstream there's a few other customers. But, you know, by and large, it's those types of vessels that require the lifts. Some of the taller sailboats that come up through, they'll require a lower lift. You know, they won't have to go to the full 135 feet. But, you know, we've drastically reduced the number of lifts, so, which is important. You know, the roadway on the top, it's the US 1 bypass. It's kind of the regional crossing in the Portsmouth Kittery location. You know, there's three bridges there. There's downstream of this, there's the Memorial Bridge, which serves primarily local traffic. That's US Route 1. The Sarah Long Bridge is the Route 1 bypass. It's more of a regional crossing. And then just upstream of the Sarah Long, there's the I-95 Interstate Bridge, which is, you know, as far as Maine DOT is concerned, that's the most important bridge in our inventory. That's the, you know, the primary connection with the state of Maine with the rest of the continental U.S. So that makes, just by proximity, that makes the Sarah Long Bridge kind of the second most important bridge for the state of Maine, you know, where it serves as a backup to the I-95 high-level bridge, and then it also provides that regional crossing for the area as well.
And you've got, the priority goes to the roadway, so you don't have a lot of interruptions in flow through the year.
That's correct.
And to do that, you had to raise the level of the roadway crossing, so the approach spans had to be raised.
We did. We with the roadway alignment, we put a vertical curve at the lift span, and I think the grades leading up to the lift span on both sides is about 3%. And we arrived at 3%. That was more driven by the railroad longitudinal profile grade. You know, we had a lot of conversation with the railroad operator, and we settled on a 3% maximum profile grade there for the railroad. But that really dictated the elevations of the bridge. You know, we started with the rail connections in both Portsmouth and Kittery. We ran that profile at 3%. And then, you know, to maintain appropriate vertical clearance for the railroad, that dictated where the road needed to be. We probably could have gone steeper with the roadway profile, but it was primarily driven by the railway.
And so now what you have is basically something like a 50-foot clearance under the lift span?
Yeah, I think where we ended up is 56 feet from mean high water. And that has resulted in, you know, like I said, it's about a two-thirds reduction in the amount of lifts.
And the lift mechanism, can you tell us something about the motors and counterweights?
Sure. There's typically two types of drive systems, these vertical lift bridges. Those are a span drive system, which where, you know, the machinery is located on the span, and it physically pulls itself up and down. The machinery isn't really mechanically connected to the counterweights. And then there's, traditionally there's a tower drive system where the machinery is all located up at the very tops of the tower. And the way that type of machinery operates is it physically turns the counterweight shiv at the top to move the bridge up and down. There's advantages and disadvantages to both types of approach. Where we ended up is something that we call a modified tower drive system. And it's a pretty unique system in that it combines some of the better attributes of a tower drive system and a span drive system. And it's an innovation that was used by our movable bridge designer, which is Hardesty and Hanover, on a bridge they did in Bordeaux, France. So that technology was adapted to our application here on Sarah Long Bridge. You know, of course, we had the opportunity to vet the feasibility of doing that type of drive system here for our specific application with our CMGC contractor. So that gave us a little bit more confidence as an owner to implement that type of innovation and that drive system and have the confidence that it would be a reliable drive system. You know, we're glad we did that because it's opened the door to a lot of enhancements when it comes to maintainability and longevity. One of the great things about the modified tower drive system is, like a span drive system, it has uphaul and downhaul ropes that physically pull up and down on the counterweight or the bridge span to move it up and down. That's one of the great things about a span drive system is you have that mechanical connection. And the downfall, you know, conversely with a tower drive system, is it relies on the friction of the counterweight ropes over that counterweight shift to move the bridge. So it's the positive connection between the modified tower drive system with the uphaul and downhaul ropes that provides a little bit more reliability. One of the great things we like about the modified tower drive system with the Sarah Long Bridge is it gave us the opportunity to place all the mechanical components right down at the very base of the tower. They're in their own climate-controlled concrete room. They're very accessible when it comes to maintenance. Maine and New Hampshire DOT, we have a maintenance crew that's dedicated to that bridge as well as its companion bridge just downstream. So we have a regular maintenance presence down there, and there's a stairway that leads right down to this mechanical room that houses all the mechanical components. It's very accessible should something go wrong. It's easy to service, and it's all protected from the elements too. So, you know, we feel like it's not only going to be reliable, but it's going to be easy to take care of as well.
Are there features of the design that ensure that the drive systems in both towers are coordinated so the bridge doesn't get askew?
Yeah, I mean, I can't give you all the details about that, but there's a number of different sensors, and it's a vector drive system that ensures that each of the motors turns at the same speed. If one of them gets a little bit ahead, the drive system will slow that motor down or speed the other motor up in the other tower. So they'll maintain the bridge, I think, level within 6 inches as it moves up or down.
Yeah.
So, skew control is always a concern with a tower drive system that's not mechanically connected. You know, it's virtually impossible for a span drive system to get out of skew. But with a tower drive system, where you've got independent motors in each tower, it's something you really got to pay attention to. So the electronics and the control system, they're responsible for maintaining the skew control.
Yeah, that's in the Chicago area, we've got some vertical lift rail bridges where that can be a real problem. The bridge gets a skew going up or down. Is it tended? Is there somebody there all the time?
There is, yep. There is. We had discussed the possibility of remote operation initially, and that's not something that we wanted to jump into right away. And I don't think the Coast Guard would be in favor of that initially as well. We've kind of left the door open for that later on. I think there is an opportunity to, at some point, retrofit the control system so this could be remotely operated. But for the here and now, we've got an operator there in the operator house 24/7.
And as you describe it, it sounds like the rail moves are so infrequent that they should be relatively easy to coordinate, to plan.
Yes, they are. They're infrequent, and when a rail move happens, there's plenty of notice from the naval shipyard, and that whole operation is coordinated not only with the bridge operator, but obviously with the director of the port as well. As you know, when the lift span needs to lower, you know, we're reducing the normal vertical under clearance for navigation down to, I think we're in the 15-foot range when we're all the way down to the bottom.
Just going back to your original statement about CMGC as a contracting mechanism, my interpretation from what you said is that the major advantage is you've got some very explicit opportunities to collaborate between a designer and a builder and owner to get what you want. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description. Maine DOT, we've used alternative delivery processes before. We've done a lot of design build. For this particular project, we really wanted and we felt it was necessary to incorporate, you know, some of the innovations and you know, thinking through some of the constructability of some of these components. We didn't feel design build was the right vehicle for us because we still wanted to maintain quite a lot of control over you know, the final product. So the great thing about CMGC is, you know, it allows, you know, a contractor to, you know, a contractor, an owner, and a designer to, you know, to kind of brainstorm some really good ideas, and then at the end of the day, the owner can make the final decision of whether or not we move forward with a particular idea and whether it's in the best interest of the owner. It's not always in design build, for example, the contractor may have different goals than an owner. You know, some of the great ideas they might have in a proposal stage might not make it to the final design because they weren't in the best interest of the contractor. It just gives us a better opportunity to really look at every idea and every possibility, you know, evaluate it on its merits and its advantages to the owner.
Yes, keeps the owner in control throughout the whole process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there another bridge like this anywhere in the United States that you're aware of?
I'm sure there is. But we haven't found it. Every time we think we've done something that no one else has done, we seem to find something that's somewhat similar. But one just like it, I'm sure you won't find one just like it. You'll probably find different bridges with you know, maybe some different similarities. Another thing that you probably won't find on a vertical lift bridge around the United States is I think most of the vertical lift bridges you see are truss superstructures. Particularly ones that carry rail or carry rail and vehicular traffic. One of the things about our bridge is it's a structural steel box girder. You know, this is something that, you know, we're pretty proud of, and we feel like, you know, a truss structure is very maintenance intensive. You've got a lot of gusset plates. You've got a lot of area for debris to collect. The box girder is, you know, it's got some very clean lines. It's very easy to take care of, inspect, maintain. And, you know, I don't think we could have got there or would have dared to go there with a traditional design bid build or a design build. And the reason for that is there were some challenges there with design, fabrication, and even erection that, you know, we really needed to put, you know, all those heads together and have a conversation and work through some of those different details. And with the CMGC type approach, you know, we were able to you know, sit down, designer, fabricator, and erector, and work through a lot of the challenges with doing a, you know, 300-foot box girder span that's going to support E80 train loading and vehicular loading in a lift span configuration. Yeah, that's something that I think is going to serve us pretty well in the future as far as maintenance and inspection and longevity.
I think you ended up with a product that's not only unique, but it's quite a beautiful bridge, something to admire. So, Jeff, I really appreciate your spending the time to describe this bridge to us. We want to try to put a picture of it on our website. Thank you for introducing us to both the bridge design itself and the process that brought you that design. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks for having me on, and we're always happy to, always proud to talk about it. So,
well, it's something to be proud of for sure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I'm Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.